Cryptid Code. We're your hosts, Harmon
and Jessica,
and we like to talk about cryptids, aliens, and generally anything spooky.
We might cuss, like, just a little.
Indeed. Welcome back, Cryptid Coders. Coders? I'm trying to find a nickname for our fans. All 12 of them. But regardless, it's another Harmon-led episode, so let's dive right in. Now, Jess, the case I have for us today will take us to the beautiful state of Arizona. Have you ever been?
I have not.
I'm a fan of their green tea.
I think the farthest west I've been is Kentucky, and it was just to stop at a gas station and pee.
You never been past the Mississippi?
No. So I've been out of the country, like, once, but most of my traveling has occurred on the East Coast.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah. My dad's a trucker, so I've been to all 48. Over 48.
Nice.
I'll be in the cold, hard ground before I go to Alaska. I do want to go to Alaska at some point.
The cold, hard ground. Alaska.
Bullworm. But our story begins in 1903. A lone hunter named I.W. Stevens was rowing his small canoe along a river in the Grand Canyon. His eyes scanned the shoreline, looking for a good hunting spot, and he found one. There was a section of riverbank flat enough to land, with a gradual path leading further up. Stevens docked his dinghy, and rifle in hand, began his trek into the Mongolian Rim. It wasn't long till his hike was interrupted, though, by a rustling in a nearby brush. Slowly, cautiously, Stevens approached. And as he did, the sounds became clearer, louder. It wasn't just the rattling of dry branches. You could hear the tearing of meat, along with greedy, sloppy eating. The air was tinged with a coppery smell of blood. Stevens peered through the growth and spotted it. It looked like a man, but covered in gray body hair, atop tan brown skin, with matted white hair on its head and a long, pallid beard that stretched well down to its knees. Whatever this thing was, it was hunched over the corpse of a cougar. Talon-like fingernails, about 2 inches long, dug into the meat. Shocked, Stevens might have gasped. That would explain why the creature's green eyes suddenly turned towards him. The thing screeched, running towards Stevens while waving a club. He raised his rifle to defend himself, but at that moment, a cry caused both of them to stop in their tracks. Stevens whipped his head around, seeing a mountain lion and his two cubs on a ridge just above them. After letting out a roar, it crouched low, ready to pounce upon the hunter. But Stevens was faster. He turned his rifle onto the thing, and with a thundering shot, the lion dropped to the ground, dead. The strange wild man seemed to have been frightened by the loud sound, as it was gone when Stevens looked again. Wild man or not, Stevens was spooked enough to end his hunting trip quickly. He made his way back down to his boats. As he was preparing to leave, he saw the creature had returned, and already started devouring the mountain lion's carcass. Once the boat was a safe distance away, Stevens shouted at the beast, to which it responded by waving his club and laying out a blood-curdling scream. Stevens would leave the Grand Canyon with no prize save for a once-in-a-lifetime story. A story he would give to the Arizona Republican newspaper. He not only shared his experience, but posited his own theory as to the creature's origins. Quote, "Tradition records that years ago, hostile Indians captured three men, bound them to logs far up the canyon, and cast them adrift upon the swollen river. It may be that this wild creature is one of those unfortunate men who, by chance, freed himself and escaped death, but was made insane by his awful experience." End quote. In time, others would see this, or perhaps a similar creature, enough that they gave it a name. One that even now is spoken in the offices of cryptozoologists the world over. The Arizona-bound apparition known as the Mogollon Monster. Are you familiar?
I'm not.
Okay.
Just once, I wish one of these motherfuckers who spots a cryptid would, like, have a normal name. I.W. Stevens! I don't know.
Well, like, it's... Yeah, just... abbreviated.
I know it's abbreviated, but, like, these people, like, just never once can they be, like, normal. Like, hey, Carl was out there in the woods.
I wouldn't trust a motherfucker named Carl, though. Sorry to all the Carls listening, but I inherently don't trust you.
Chad.
No.
Brad.
No.
Janet.
Okay, is this the Brady Bunch? I ain't never seen the Brady Bunch.
The Rocky Horror Picture Show? Brad and Janet?
You got me. You got me. I'm a fake weirdo. I'm actually fucking normal.
Oh, no. Get out.
I'm a normie.
Ew. Also, like, why can we not just have one cryptid that is spotted in the era of fucking digital cameras?
I don't know, man.
Like, I just want one where it's like, oh yeah, I saw it, it screeched, it was eating a cougar, and I just fucking click, got a picture, woo, look at this thing, fucked up.
Well, we might have a photo of it later on, not to spoil too much. Don't get your hopes up. It's not great, but...
I never do.
It's a cryptid podcast. You have to be ready for blurry photos. Have you heard of the Mogollon Rim, though?
No.
Mogollon Rim. Native Arizoners. I'm sorry. I'm gonna fuck up the pronunciation. And I apologize. For those unfamiliar, it is about 200 miles of high cliffs and canyons in the north end of Arizona. Making up the southern part of the Colorado Plateau, the rim runs the gambit from desert to terrain closer to the Rocky Mountains. Most of it is about 4,000 to 5,000 feet above sea level, with a peak a whopping 8,000 feet. So I guess it's a fitting location for a monster to hide. Now, the Mogollon Rim sees a fair share of tourism. Hunters, hikers, campers, all kinds of visitors would come to visit its 10 lakes and several campgrounds. To give a sense how many people they get, one of the campgrounds, Aspen Campgrounds, has a total of 136 campsites that you can reserve. It is also a frequent spot for the Boy Scouts. Did I ever tell you I was in the Boy Scouts?
I hated it. I'm sure you did, buddy.
No offense to the Boy Scouts out there. We're just making so many enemies this season.
I would like to reiterate our support of the Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I never made it to Eagle Scout. I didn't stay very long. I went to a Civil War reenactment.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was fun. I parked cars.
How old were you?
Like 13.
And you were parking people's cars?
Well, directing them where to park.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like you were valet service.
No. Anyway, according to WeirdUS.com, a website that deals in the para-Americana, Boy Scouts at the nearby Camp Geronimo had a common story regarding the Mogollon Monster. You see, there was an abandoned... a cabin not far from the campsite, and like most abandoned buildings, it had stories. Specifically, the Boy Scouts would tell tales of an old pioneer named Bill Spade, who had it made with his own patch of land and a small cabin to live in. Actually, it was a ranch house.
Hmm.
However, for a few months, no one heard from him, and they came to look for him, finding his cabin smashed and ransacked. A search of the area revealed no traces of Bill, save for his face.
Ew.
Peeled off his skull and left swaying from an end of a tree branch.
Yeah, that's nasty.
Yeah.
That's some Texas chainsaw shit.
Was it a monster? A murderer? No one is sure. But according to legend, a large hairy creature has been seen lurking near the cabin ever since.
Of course.
Pretty fucking intense campfire story.
Yeah.
What
Boy Scout troop leader okayed this?
We'll get into that.
Okay.
I managed to find a program. It's not just like a spooky little side thing. It's an event. Yeah, they gather all the kids there and tell the monster story.
Oh my god. The Boy Scouts are so fucked up. This shit's nasty. You know, you have some grown man who's literally just also dressed like one of these little boys, hiking all these other little boys out into the forest and telling them scary monster stories.
figure. Okay, okay, Jess.
Turns around and I'm the real monster.
I can just say it's very different than the campfire stories I heard growing up. I went to a Christian camp, so most of my campfire stories are about, like, you know, Jesus.
And then Jesus saved them all from the monster.
And then in 3 days, he rose again. If you're hearing some background noise, Jessica, do you want to explain your newest house guest?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I work at a farm store. This farm store accepts rabbits, and I fell in love with one, and I brought it home and had it registered as an emotional support animal so that it could stay in my apartment. He stresses me out, so he's not doing his job, but he's over there chewing on his litter box, and I know that he's about to throw it across the cage, and then he's going to act like he's afraid of it, like he didn't just do it himself.
He's doing the one thing he's not supposed to. He's doing the opposite of his job.
Yeah, he ain't working. The therapist who wrote my letter for him described me as mentally disabled, by the way. So if you make fun of me on Twitter, it's a hate crime.
You're canceled, buddy.
Where were we?
I don't know how much of this is staying in. Now, it is entirely possible that this is simply a fabricated story to scare some Boy Scouts. Especially since the story itself has some inconsistencies.
As they do.
The version I mentioned had the pioneer's name as Bill, while other sources say Sam. Sam Spade also happens to be a pretty popular film detective, if you've heard of the Maltese Falcon. It's like a really famous noir. So it's possible that there's some, like, cross-contamination.
I feel like that happens a lot in stories, though. There's always, you know, something that gets messed up and crossed over with something else.
Hey, folklore is pretty much one big game of telephone.
Yeah.
I also managed to find a Camp Geronimo program, and it turns out the counselors themselves actually still tell these stories at the camp itself. Now, it's known as the Spade Ranch House. They even have a program named after it, the Spade Ranch High Adventure Camp. It's meant for older kids, about 14 and up. And involves rock climbing, mountain biking, caving, and presumably feeding children to monsters. This makes me a bit more likely to think the story was made up. Because I generally like to think that if there is a genuine report of a lone pioneer getting himself defaced, we wouldn't bring vulnerable children there by the literal busload.
Right.
Hopefully we would keep kids clear of that area. Or maybe the campers are brought in as a way to appease the beast.
Hey, Boy Scouts of America. The fuck?
Just a conveyor belt of children directly into the monster's mouth.
Well, I mean, in Twilight, that's what they do at the fucking Volturi, is they just take in these tourists by the busload to show them, like, the fucking vampire church, basically. Like, and then the vampires eat them. So, and, like, there's women and children and everything, so maybe that's what we're doing here.
How many times can that happen before people catch on?
I don't know. Like, does no one ever realize they're taking groups of tourists into this fucking building and no one comes out?
And that was in the Vatican, right?
Well, I mean, the Volturi, I guess, is, like, the vampire Vatican.
Yeah, but isn't it, like, in Vatican City? Where's the Pope?
I think so. I don't know. The Pope is probably off, like...
We sneak in during the off hour.
It's probably, I don't know, I saw this funny meme that one of my friends sent me yesterday where the Pope had on this giant collar and it's like when he's frightened he can spray holy venom up to 15 feet. And I'd like to imagine he's off spraying people with the holy venom.
Could you imagine being a vampire and get a face full of that?
What happens?
You'd probably know. Mm-hmm. How did we get onto this?
Because you said they're bringing vulnerable children here by the busload, and I said, yeah, well, that's what they did in Twilight, and now we're talking about the Pope.
Okay. And our next story might show that we're not too far off the mark. Because our next encounter will bring us to 1944, with a child named Don Davis. I've never met a child with a first name Don. I've only met old men named them.
mean, I'm assuming his name's Donald.
I don't know, because I've only ever seen Don. Don Davis.
Don Davis.
He was a young 13-year-old Boy Scout camping near Tonto Creek outside Payson, Arizona. After a long day of camp activities, Davis was wrapped up in his sleeping bag, getting some much-needed rest. Rest that was interrupted, however, when he could hear someone going for their packs of gear. He called out to them, asking them to stop making so much noise. Whatever was making the noise did stop. It stopped and turned towards Davis, who realized with sinking despair in his stomach that that wasn't a scout at all. It wasn't a person. The thing stalked closer, eventually standing directly over the terrified teen. So close that Davis got a damn good look at it. He wrote, quote, "The creature was huge. His eyes were deep set and hard to see, but they seemed expressionless. His face seemed pretty much devoid of hair, but there seemed to be hair along the sides of his face. His chest, shoulders, and arms were massive, especially the upper arms, easily upward of 6 inches in diameter, perhaps much, much more. I could see he was pretty hairy, but didn't observe really how thick the body hair was. The face head was very square, square sides and squared up chin like a box," end quote. For a moment, the two stared into each other's eyes. The monster in quiet curiosity.
Imagine.
I looked at him and he looked at me. I looked at him. The monster stared on in quiet curiosity and David in hushed horror. Though a teen he might have been, Davis eventually fell back onto the classic method of defense that has safeguarded children against monsters for centuries. He hid under the covers. Out of sight, out of mind, he decided as he pulled the sleeping bag over his eyes. And ironically, this might have saved him, as the creature seemed to have gotten bored or been satisfied its curiosity, and simply left. Left without a trace, save for a foul odor. You see, this monster appears to have ape-like features and characteristics. If it also shares in primate behaviors, it could take eye contact as a challenge. That's why you're not supposed to look gorillas in the eyes when you're visiting a zoo. They take it as you're challenging them, and it sparks their violent instincts.
That's crazy. That's just crazy that we're still allowed to, like, put gorillas in public places, knowing that someone's gonna stare at it.
Yeah.
Also, I'm really impressed that this kid just, like, turned into a fucking turtle and the cryptid left it alone. But at the same time, why does every cryptid stink? They all have a smell.
Well, they're not taking a lot of showers.
I mean, I'm sure. I feel like Mothman is a clean boy.
Yeah, but he's ephemeral.
Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, you're a wild man, you're out in the wilderness, you're not bathing, so, like, if you're killing dudes, that blood's just getting stuck in your hair, it's not really coming off.
Yeah.
And, like, they don't have bidets out in the wilderness.
Are you saying it has shit stuck to its fur, Harvey?
More than likely.
Ew.
I'm just, it's science, Jess. So it's entirely possible that had Davis kept his eyes on the creature, it might have lashed out, and we wouldn't have this story today. Don Davis, it's worth noting, would be spurned by this encounter to actually take up a career as a cryptozoologist. Yeah, he apparently was so scared, he's like, damn, I'm never gonna get that adrenaline high again. Seconds, please. I can't wait to do this shit again. Now, Jess, you might have caught on that this creature bears a striking resemblance to noted celebrity of the field, the king of cryptids himself, Bigfoot.
Yes.
A lot of people believe that the Moglin monster is just a regional rebranding of a local Sasquatch, and frankly, I'm inclined to agree. So when I began researching this case, I thought it would be worth looking into reported Bigfoot's encounter in the area. And I found some interesting stuff. For example, we have our first piece of physical evidence.
Ooh.
As in 2009, one Larry Jenkins.
Larry Jenkins.
You said you want normal
Jenkins
names.
Jenkins Ford.
You said you want normal names.
I did.
Reported to have seen the monster outside. Seligman? 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 Seligman Balls.
Seligman Balls, Arizona. I'm so sorry. Anyone in Arizona who is listening. Seligman?
Well, I prefer Seligman over Seligma. So we're just going to say Seligman, Arizona.
Okay.
Upon searching the area, Jenkins discovered 15-inch footprints around his cabin with a, quote, grimy, jagged toenail measuring more than 2 inches in width, end quote.
I'm sorry. Do we think this may have just been Shaq after skipping pedicures for a few months?
No, no one filed that, but
okay.
I'm glad you did. You're really
Shaq
thinking outside the box.
Is a massive individual.
What would he be doing barefoot in the countryside of Arizona?
I don't know.
In the snow.
I feel like he's pretty humble. He just likes to go out. The man who once spent $50,000 at Walmart. He's humble.
You see a man walking through the forest barefoot and you go, he's humble. That is a modest individual.
Yeah.
What the fuck, bro?
Especially if it's Shaq. I'm sorry, I love Shaq. Like, no, I just think he's a great man.
I do too. This is the Shaq code.
It is. Like, when he dropped that deal with Reebok to make more affordable Walmart shoes so that, you know, little kids who looked up to him could actually afford them, I feel like that was sweet.
That's adorable.
He dropped, like, a $15 million Reebok deal to make shoes for Walmart instead. Hello, we're the Shaq Code.
We're your
Shaquille
hosts.
O'Neal, I love you. You're never listening to this, but I love you.
What if he tweets us back?
Honestly, I think I would, like, shit myself and then cry. Be like, oh my god.
That time. We really like to talk about everything. Oh, we really like to talk about basketball, shoes, and generally anything Space Jam.
Literally, we're not even talking about basketball. We're just talking about what a good human being Shaquille O'Neal.
But okay. Back on topic.
Crusty toenails. Okay, let's go.
Great. Finally, some physical evidence to bring some credibility to the creature's legend. There's a problem.
There's always a problem.
This supposed evidence was being promoted by a man named Tom Biscardi. And sadly, this was not Biscardi's first foray into the world of squatching. In 2005, he advertised that he would be displaying undisputable, irrefutable proof of Bigfoot's existence via footage of a Bigfoot body, and he'd be showing it on a paid webcam service. Basically, Bigfoot's OnlyFans. But when the date for said live stream arrived, he had to confess that he had no body and was, quote, swindled by a woman in Stagecoach, Nevada. He did not explain how he was swindled.
So wait, this man was like, I have a Bigfoot body. And then he was like, God damn, this bitch in Stagecoach really told me she had a Bigfoot body. Turns out, guys, she was a liar. She did not have it. Like, go hunt it yourself. Go kill it yourself.
Well, I just feel like I got swindled in Stagecoach. It's like something cowboys say, not real people.
This is definitely not a real human being.
It gets worse.
How?
This was followed by another incident in 2008 where he announced that he had another Bigfoot body. This body was recovered in the position of Rick Dyer and Matthew Whitten, who happened to be a Georgia police officer. So confident was Biscardi in his evidence that he told the press, quote, "Last weekend, I touched it. I measured its feet. I felt its intestines," end quote.
Why are we touching the Bigfoot?
And that sounds so much dirtier than it should. Saying he rearranged Bigfoot's guts.
Oh! Harmon! No!
Would entirely admit that the body was a rubber monkey costume.
Okay, listen. I'm sorry for the scream laugh, but that was a genuine reaction because I don't read. So how this works, I don't script. I don't get to read the script before Harmon comes over and we record this. Whatever he says, you get my like genuine, like live brain feed of whatever this is. And it was a rubber monkey costume. It's like that episode of fucking SpongeBob where the gorilla was underwater.
Rick, they're on to us.
What the fuck? You're right. Whose guts did he rearrange?
Did they just fill it with like hamburger or something?
They probably did, honestly. I mean, imagine it's just like a rubber monkey costume filled with sausage, and this guy's like, "I touched the Bigfoot.
I measured his feet."
A rubber monkey costume. It probably didn't even have feet.
Just what the fuck?
Was someone in it, like on the table? Is this guy's like feeling it up?
From what I've seen the news reports, no.
So it's a hollow rubber monkey costume. And he's measuring its feet and he's going, "Yes, this is a Bigfoot. This is a Bigfoot. I touched it."
Sticking its hands in its intestines like it's a fucking sock puppet.
What the actual fuck is this guy on? Because I want some.
Dude. When we get to Sasquatch, when we get to Bigfoot, that's going to be some of the goofiest stuff.
Oh my god.
The lengths people have gone to try and cash in on Bigfoot.
Well, like, there's literally TV shows about, like, finding Bigfoot and shit. You know, like...
Fucking not finding
people
Bigfoot.
People are obsessed with Bigfoot.
So, not the most reliable promoter. Not helped by the fact that the latest info I could find on the supposed evidence, meaning the toenail, was from Route 66 News, which published an update to one of their articles reading, quote, "The evidence of some sort of Sasquatch in Seligman area appears to be a bit scant so far. But at least the investigators appear to be having fun traipsing around the admittedly lovely high desert," end quote. So truly, the real Bigfoot was the friends we made along the way. Despite this bogus evidence, reports of some bestial bipedal continue to come in, particularly with the indigenous population. One man, Colette Alata, was quoted in 2006 saying, quote, "There have been more sightings than ever before. It can't be ignored any longer," end quote. Another, a tribal officer named Ray Burnett, said, quote, "A couple of times they've seen this creature looking through windows. They're scared when they call," end quote. One woman, how would you pronounce this? Marjorie Grimes reported seeing the Moglin monster outside White River. According to her, quote, "It was all black and it was tall. The way it walked, it was taking big strides. I put on the brakes and raced back and looked between the two trees where it was, and it was gone," end quote. More encounters of this ilk were covered in the most recent season of Netflix's Unsolved Mysteries. in their episode Paranormal Rangers, which follows tribal officers and dealing with reports of the paranormal. Have you seen Unsolved Mysteries?
I've watched some of them here and there. Not a whole lot.
Can I give like the smallest critique of that show?
Is it actually the smallest critique?
Yeah, but it's called Unsolved Mysteries. So it's supposed to be mysterious.
Yeah.
But at least a few of those cases, it's
not that mysterious.
Burningly obvious what happened. It's just the police didn't arrest anyone.
Yeah, that is a problem. I kind of use it as a background noise show. It's one of those that, like, you know, Swiffer the apartment, I'm gonna like turn on Unsolved Mysteries and like, it's there, but I'm not paying attention.
It should be no surprise that the Moglin monster has roots in local indigenous folklore. I even managed to find a supposed origin story for the creature, which opens a new avenue for what exactly this cryptid could be. The following is from WeirdUS.com and reads, quote, other stories making the rounds attempt to explain the origins of the Moglin monster. They vary in detail, but for the most part implicated a tormented Indian bent on revenge. One variant tells of a prehistoric tribe who, for untold reasons, exiled their own chief. The chief called upon the spirits and was transformed into a Heesrid boogeyman, which enabled him to scare away his former clan. He lives on today, continuing to defend his territory. In other versions, it was a tribe's medicine man who performed the transformation, enabling the chief to seek revenge on a rival who had stolen his wife. Further variations identify the Moglin monster as a pioneer who was a victim of an Indian attack. He escaped into the woods, but was cursed by the spirits and went insane. In a strange amalgamation of stories, the monster is the phantom of a white man who, as punishment for murdering an Indian woman, was hung from a tree by his hands, stretched to a height of 8 feet, then skinned alive and left to die. Damned by the spirits, his ghost continues to roam the woods as a tragically misnamed skinwalker.
Ew. End quote.
That last sentence opens a whole new can of worms as to exactly what we're dealing with. Now, I don't want to dive too deep into help pedestrian territory because we're, you know, two white people sitting around a coffee table. Not exactly experts in that culture, and I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings or appropriate anything. But it is an avenue worth some light exploring. The idea of it being a chief or even a medicine man plays very well into the original folklore concept that skinwalkers are not just monsters, but witches and practitioners of magic using dark deals to shapeshift. The last story about an executed settler haunting the area is also intriguing. Could it actually be a ghost? Could this be something similar to the Grey Man of Ben MacDewey we saw in Scotland? What are your thoughts so far?
I don't know. I'm kind of waiting to see how all this kind of connects and plays out. Because there's just a lot for me right now.
Keep waiting, homie. I managed to find some more encounters by searching the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, specifically their catalog for Arizona. The first thing I found was dated June 26, 2016, in Coconino County. More specifically, it was Kelly Springs Campgrounds at milepost number 7 around 14 p.m. The entry reads as such, quote, it was a Sunday afternoon in late June 2016. I was camped in a developed USFS campground on the Coconino National Forest in central Arizona in the Moglin Rim area. The CG is situated in a canyon within a mixed forest of spruce, fir, oak, aspen, and mainly ponderosa pine. The cliff edge of the rim is about 3/4 of a mile south of the CG. I keep wanting to just say campground, but he abbreviated, so I feel like I should.
The CG.
It sounds like those, no offense, ROTC kids, but like those ROTC kids who are like at the bus stop and they call like the LZ.
The ROTC kid who is like, I'm the hallway monitor.
And calls you civilian?
Yes.
I will not apologize to ROTC kids.
Yeah, I'm not going to either because you're kind of fucked up.
Let's see if this gets in.
Pretending to be in the military in high school. I'm like, ew.
I was sitting in the shade and I just finished reading a work of fiction by James Patterson, which had a strange ending. I was musing about the ending and just looked west across the CG when a very fast-moving dark figure crossed the CG heading from north to south. My first thought was of a large kid on a bicycle. Why does it sound funny? Look at that large child.
Look at that fat kid on a bike.
Anyway.
Bicycle.
As it was moving so fast on the in-camp gravel road, but its travel path was counter to the road. And I realized what it was that I had seen. It was a very large Bigfoot. The sign only lasted about 3 seconds, and I was very lucky to have seen it at all. It crossed the CG in a shaded area and blended well into its background. But the meadow beyond it to the west was bathed in afternoon sunlight and backlit the dark figure. It was about 125 yards from my point of view, from my viewpoint, so facial detail was not clear. It ran with slight forward cant to its body. I know that the head did not bob up and down like human runners at speed. The coat was almost black looking, but with a backlighting, I noticed a slight reddish tint to the figure's profile as it passed by. I had not noticed its leg or arm movement. Imagine if it just wasn't moving its arms or legs, it's just floating.
Also, I love how he described it as a very large Bigfoot. Like, obviously, it's going to be very large.
Well, it would be weirder if he said a very average Bigfoot.
Right, but like, it's just, you know, why?
What's your metric? It's
just a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there is no metric.
Yeah. What's your reference point, I guess?
Yeah. Also, why not big tire? Big wheel?
Shut up. That'd be a good Patreon thing if we ever start a Patreon. Is I explained my car's theory.
I took Harmon to my favorite bar once, and he had one beer. Explaining it here. I know.
And I'm no, not explaining it. I explained it stone cold sober.
No, you had one beer at this point, and you looked at me and you go, "Should I ask the bartender if he's ever seen Cars?"
So much of this episode's getting cut. What if we're done? Finish this episode is like 20 minutes.
It probably will be.
Oof. Later, I went over to where the figure had crossed. On the north side of the drains area, there is an area of crushed grass near the beginning of the travel path. And the figure had moved south across the in-camp road and had gone to a depression in the high grass. He's really sad. I heard it playing 9 Inch Nails. Is that sad music? Today.
It's just been Bigfoot, like, crying to Johnny Cash.
Oh my god. What if he dyed all of his fur black? Could you imagine a Bigfoot with that emo bull haircut?
Where are you?
That fits. That fits for a Bigfoot.
It really does.
Yeah. I'm over here. There are other areas of crushed grass along the suspected travel path. Also, a crushed fern near the split rail fence that bordered the CG, where I suspect it had stepped over, crossed the forest road, and went to the thick timber. I believe.
Bam, boy. Hey, thick boy.
Hold on to that thought. I believe the earth depression in a row of large logs obscured my view of his legs as it passed by. I'd only seen his torso from the hips up. And did note that the figure did not appear to have much of a neck, if any. The torso was very thick, and I guess it was at least twice the thickness of a human.
So what we're saying is that Bigfoot is a Kardashian.
No, he's talking about their chest.
He's
a bench presser.
Oh.
It was a once-in-a-lifetime event, and as I said, I was very lucky to have seen the Sasquatch at all. Truly an awesome memory that I will carry in my mind's eye forever. End quote. I want to...
Bigfoot's thicker than a sneaker.
I want to add that a BFRO investigator visited the site and found that the depressions mentioned in the story were still there 9 days later. Man, I wish my depression only lasted 9 days.
Same.
Our next encounter comes from Apache County and is dated to June 10th. 2021. So that's pretty recent. Quote, heading west on I-40 at 0930, my wife and I saw a Bigfoot 100 to 150 yards from the highway heading north. It was not running, but walking. It never looked at the highway. It must have been 7 to 8 feet tall. It was thick, as in well built. There was a rock outcropping behind it, which made it very visible. There had to be other travelers who saw this also. We got a long look at it. 15 to 20 seconds. It is west of Hyuk, Arizona. Arizona. End quote. One last thing I want to leave off on before we get into the pulp culture aspects is an article from the White Mountain Independent. It's dated to March 26, 2010, and tells of a former Arizona lawman named A.K. Riley, who claims to have found Bigfoot tracks outside the town of White River. And I actually do have a photo for you. Let me see if I can pull it up.
Okay, another thing I'd like to bring up. 2021, these people are saying they got, like, a 15 to 20 second look at this thing?
Yep.
At the Bigfoot, or, like, it's a little cave?
At the Bigfoot, I guess.
At the Bigfoot. It is 2021. Where is your cell phone?
Well, I don't know how to say this, but from how they write, I assume they're older.
Ugh.
And...
fuck these old people with no phones. Shit pisses me off. If I saw a Bigfoot for 15 to 20 seconds, you know what I'd be doing? I'd be standing there with my phone in my hand going, guys, look at this fucking Bigfoot. Like, I would start a TikTok live. I'd be like, look at this shit.
Okay, but Jess, no one watches TikTok lives. No one. Okay, I'm still pulling up the episode. I'll clear the gaps. But here are the photo of the footprints.
Jesus. They look like giant kidney beans. I'm sorry.
No, that's a good point. I wish their photos were a little closer.
It looks like Bigfoot needs some arch support.
Yeah.
Shaq, can we get on that?
Now that we mention it.
They don't look like feet.
I can't see, like, toes, because for some reason they took a photo very far from the print.
Okay, but even, like, these that are, like, really close up to the print, kind of, like, this does not look like a foot to me. Like, there's no prints here. Also, some of them seem to be going this way. Like, this looks like it'd be the top of the foot on this side, but then over here, this looks like it'd be the top of the foot.
And they're all the same.
They're exactly the same.
Like...
this looks very, like, staged to me.
Yeah, we're not going to call anyone liars because we can't afford a libel suit, but I'm just saying I don't know if I buy it.
Yeah, I personally don't. I just think it looks a lot like somebody took something out there and just kind of like, I don't know, they almost like made a swooping motion, like as if you're trying to like... it's like they had the idea of a foot in their head and what a foot should look like.
Yeah, or they have like one of those fake feet things that you can just press down. Because again, when people walk, we normally walk heel
to toe.
Yeah.
And so the pressure that you're putting down, in theory, the like heel should go deeper.
Yeah.
And the way that looks is just all one. I mean, unless Bigfoot's flat-footed, but there's an arch there.
Yeah.
So... I mean,
I guess there's, like, a possibility he just walks, like, completely like flat footed and not arch, like not.
That sounds like heel, a lot of
toe.
Effort. It wouldn't be as efficient. It seems. Well, I mean, it's an animal.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I only got this from like a TV show that back in like the ancient, like pre-colonial days, a lot of Native Americans learned to walk flat footed because it was quieter.
I mean, yeah, and that's something that like. When I used to go hunting and whatever, like, you do walk pretty flat-footed, trying to make less noise, like, you're trying to break less sticks, you know, crunch less leaves. But also, if you just walk very, very slowly, heel to toe, you can kind of accomplish the same thing. So.
I also feel like the tracks would just be, in general, deeper of how big this thing's supposed to be.
Right, you're imagining a very large creature, so you have to assume that it's quite heavy, you know, like, probably, what, 300 to 400 pounds, I would imagine, like at the least. Like bears are what, 3 to 5, depending.
I'll look up specifically Arizona bears.
I think they have grizzlies out there, don't they?
We actually get into that later. No, it's just black bears.
Is it just black bears? Still though, I think a black bear can be like up to 500 pounds, like males.
Black bears. Adult male black bears weigh up to 350 pounds.
Really? That's it?
Yeah.
Huh.
They're the smaller end of the bears.
I love how we're talking about bear sizes now, but no, I'm just thinking, in comparison to, like, even the largest bear, I would imagine people are describing Bigfoot as this absolutely massive creature. You have to imagine most people have probably, like, maybe not seen a bear in person, but they have a good idea of, like,
what a bear
would look like. So if you're describing this as huge in comparison to a bear, like it's unmistakably not a bear because it's too big. You have to imagine at the very least this thing's gonna be, you know, 400 or 500 pounds if the largest bear in your area is 350.
Well, we'll get into later of the bear thing, but let me just add some more stuff. Oh, no, I didn't have anything more. Okay. There is a photo I want to show you. This was a photo, supposedly, of the Moglan monster. We don't have an exact source on this, so that's already pretty iffy. I've heard two different stories. One was it was taken by a man's car. The second story was it was from a security camera from a ranch house. But this is the photo itself.
I mean, it definitely looks like it was taken on a potato or a toaster. It definitely looks to me more like security camera footage than like anything else. But I feel like this could be a man in a rubber monkey suit.
Yeah, because again, we don't know the source of this thing.
It also, I mean, look at this tree over here that's kind of down and like looks pretty low to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
What I would imagine is that I just feel like it's a Bigfoot, it should be much larger. Maybe unless that's like a baby.
Yeah, which that's known to happen. Or we don't know the size of that tree.
I mean, that's true. But I mean, it just looks so low to the ground. It just, and like, this is like, this brush to me looks so low. Like, this is the ground here.
Apparently it's supposed to be carrying a deer, but I'm not sure if I can see it.
I mean, it does kind of look like it over here.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's carrying something, or maybe that's an arm.
Yeah, it could be either.
Maybe it's carrying something, or maybe, if you look here, this looks like it's the head of a bear that's jumping down. Like, that's its back end.
Oh.
And that looks like the head. It looks more like it could be a bear to me than anything else. Because I think what they're trying to say is, like, this is the head. And this is, like, shoulder blades here.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
But from here, this looks like the head of a bear to me. This looks like its front foot is hitting the ground. And it looks like maybe there's a hill back here. Or it's, like, coming down off of another tree that's fallen. But, like, this looks like underbelly. This looks like the other foot. And then this looks like maybe it's the other foot kind of up in the air where it's jumping.
Yeah, you can kind of see that the brush goes up, I guess. So it could be that. Could be like a little hill. Yeah. So not convincing?
Not convincing. I think it's a bear.
Well, first First time in a while we get some photographic evidence, quotation marks, and I hope you're loving the world of blurry photos.
I mean, I know that, like, most, like, cryptid photos are, like, gonna be blurry photos, and usually I think there's a good way to debunk it, like, that just, that feels like a narrative.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind photos being blurry too much, because I know if I saw a monster, I would be freaking out.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, it's hard. It's hard to get photos of something that's moving.
Exactly. But at the same time, I feel like I've seen more convincing evidence of, like, Sasquatch. Like, I'm not saying, like, that Sasquatch is not, like, real, or Bigfoot, whatever you refer to him as, is not, like, a thing. I'm just saying that, like, that is not the most convincing piece of evidence, in my opinion.
Yeah, I get that. Out of the way, let's move on to pulp culture.
Love pop culture, it's my favorite part.
Really?
Yeah, of every episode, I think the pop culture shit is like my favorite.
This one's pretty interesting. Now, like many cryptids do, the Moglin monster became an icon in the local community and is surprisingly popular. It's not Flatwoods or Mothman or anything, but more than you would expect. A big example is that the monster's namesake is used for a big marathon race. It's called the Moglin Monster 100. It is, quote, a rugged, challenging trail race taking place about 90 minutes northeast of Phoenix, Arizona, just outside the small town of Pine, Arizona. The Moglin Monster includes the advanced degree endurance race of 100 miles.
Good God.
With the addition of a 42-kilometer race on Sunday. The race navigates up, down, around, and through the beautiful Moglin Rim. Think we could do it?
No!
No! I'm not a runner. I would die.
I have asthma. And it's Arizona.
Yeah.
It's hot.
Well, we might be suited for the next thing. You see, the Moglin Monster is also the subject of an escape room.
Huh.
Yeah, it's designed by a company called the Nemesis Club, and is hosted in Phoenix, Arizona. The escape room is less about escaping, and more setting a trap for the titular terror.
Interesting.
And the scenario places you and your friends at an abandoned ranger campsite, evacuated due to the presence of a mysterious cryptid. Before he left, though, the rangers had a plan to lure the creature in and capture irrefutable proof of its existence. With them gone, the objective is to figure out their clues, find out what their plan was, pull it off, and get the shot of the century. For those interested, you can actually make reservations online. The tickets cost about $37.99 per person.
You want to just, like, take a flight to Arizona, do the escape room, and then fly home?
Dude, kinda. Have you ever done an escape room?
I have not.
Neither have I.
That's shocking, considering who we are as people, that neither of us have ever.
Well, I'm not good at riddles.
You are the riddler.
But, yeah, you think we could pull it off? You think
Maybe.
We could get out? Well, Maybe. Not get out. Capture it. I wanted to give a quick shout out to Monster Rangers, a group who collaborate with Nemesis Club to make the escape room. They're a cryptid-themed version of the Boy Scouts. And I think they're kind of like a LARP because they also have adults. They host events. They have spirit badges, which are like, if you do certain things at the events, you get them.
That's kind of cute.
And they even launched a Kickstarter to fund development of their own tabletop RPG.
Nice.
Yeah, I just wanted to spread the word because I was intrigued when I found them. They even have like different roles for their LARPs, where like you pick what kind of monster ranger you are, where there's the scare force or the pilot. It all just left me. Psychics are one. You can play a psychic. Yeah, I just think that's really cool.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they have like an online store, some patches, and I wanted to buy one. I'm not gonna tell you what it is. Whether we're facing this thing in an escape room or encountering the dark forest of the Moglin Rim, we come to the same question. What is it? What is the Moglin Monster? There's a few theories as to its identity. The first and most obvious is, of course, it's a Bigfoot, a regional offshoot of the ubiquitous Bigfoot. It's no secret that Sasquatch is seen in just about every state in the lower 48 and Alaska. No reason for Arizona to be any different. We have all the typical behaviors of a Bigfoot. Shy around people, leaving footprints, peering in through windows. The issue of that, however, is that some of the descriptions of the creature seem significantly more human-like.
It also, to me, feels more violent than...
Did it attack it? Well, I...
Cougar and that sort of stuff, like, that just kind of feels more violent than most, like, Bigfoot descriptions. Like, not that I believe Bigfoot's completely docile by any means, but, like, I don't know.
We tend to give people a wide berth.
Yeah.
Generally, only attacks when provoked, like the Ape Canyon incident, they shot at Bigfoot before it retaliated. But recall the first encounter, the one with the cougar in the Grand Canyon. It's less hairy. It has a beard. I've never heard of a Bigfoot with a beard.
Yeah, no.
One report even said that it had no hair except for the beard itself. Even the first widespread report likened it more to a wild man than a Sasquatch or anything ape-like. Our next theory is the one proposed by I.W. Stevens, our first witness. Could this monster actually be a human? Stevens mentioned the story of those settlers bound to logs and driven mad. Several of the indigenous stories claim the creature was an exiled chief or tortured settler, too. Heck, TikTok is full of people claiming that the national parks are full of tribes of feral people who are hostile to outsiders.
I was just going to bring that up. Because, like, supposedly a lot of these, you know, feral people in the national parks are cannibals, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like that might be the best explanation. But what else we got?
Well, I want to continue on this train for a little bit. Because, like, back in, like, the early 1900s, when that area wasn't as well settled, it had to be easy for people to, like, lose everything and, like, a crime, outlaw attack, or just economic collapse and just go crazy out in the desert and run off. Like, I feel like that's entirely possible. So, yeah, it could be that there's a tribe of feral people living in the Grand Canyon. I don't know if they'll still be there, though.
I feel like that's a great place for them to be, though, because imagine, you know that terrain better than any tourist who's going to come through there. People go missing in the Grand Canyon all the time.
True, true.
There was a story of a woman who, like, several, I mean, this was probably, like, 10, 20 years ago, and I think I saw it on, like, a show called I Survived, but she went missing in the Grand Canyon, got really, really sick, and she was actually found by a tribe of people who returned her to society. But, I mean, that doesn't mean... But she had a dog and everything with her, too. I mean, doesn't necessarily mean that the people who found her weren't feral people. It just means that they were, you know, maybe prioritizing her for whatever reason at the time.
Or if there are tribes of feral people, they might not all be hostile. A good chunk of them probably would just want to be left alone.
Probably are just like, get out. Get out of our home.
But there is one issue I see with the feral human theory. And that's that these sightings went on for a really long time, from 1908 to 2 years ago. That would require this to have a reproducing population. But
tribes of feral people.
This creature is only ever seen alone. Now, Bigfoots are relatively solitary creatures, but we humans, we like to do stuff as a group. So I can buy the idea of, like, groups living out there in the wilderness, but then why are we always encountering these creatures by themselves?
Maybe it's the emo kid of the feral people.
How could this happen to me?
I mean, you have to think, too, they may hunt alone occasionally.
Yeah, but that's not a normal human thing.
They like to... but also being feral and out in the wilderness isn't, like, a normal human thing at this point.
Well, like prehistoric tribes, we always hunted in packs. So it's not impossible. That's just my thing.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that to an extent, but I also don't see that as a complete like way to negate that theory and like toss it out.
True, true. Everything's on the table.
Yeah.
Even the Bigfoot thing's on the table. On the other hand, what if those indigenous stories were true? What if there really was an exiled chief who turned to dark forces to get revenge? What if this isn't a Bigfoot, but instead, a skinwalker? Again, I don't want to delve too deep into this topic, and I don't want to step on anyone's toes or talk out my ass about a culture that's not my own. So, I'll just give the gist. These creatures are typically shamans or witches who have fallen to the temptation of dark powers and have committed some heinous crime in exchange for abilities like shapeshifting into animal. Generally immortal, these creatures feed off fear. It's even said that if you speak of them, they know you're talking about them and are attracted to your location.
Wonderful. And sorry, you spoke Jess. About it in my home.
Yeah, have fun. You live far from any Navajo reservation. You should be fine.
Okay. I am, however, quite superstitious about stuff like that. And, like, as someone who does delve into some of the witchy shit, as I like to refer to it, you know.
Is that a technical term?
Sure. But, I mean, I feel like there are people today who delve into dark forces to, like, get what they want in life and to...
Kevin Spacey.
But I do feel like it's quite a possibility, and especially people who live off the land, you know, especially in like Native American cultures, you know, a lot of that is kind of based on living on what you have, like, and what you have access to. I think that it could potentially be more likely that someone who knows how to do that and has a better connection with the earth maybe also has a better connection with the forces that would give them supernatural powers.
Yeah. And I think it explains a lot about the MO of this creature, and that's being seen, like, with Don Davis. It scared the shit out of him and then left.
Yeah, it didn't hurt him.
Because... part of the reason there's so many encounters with those that shall not be named, again, is because they don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
They need your fear. They'll kill if it's a means to an end to generate fear. But generally, dead people can't be afraid, so you're more useful alive and terrified. So that might be why they appear and then leave, and why the monster might be doing this.
Two things in my brain right now that are just like, if you've ever watched It, obviously, whatever Pennywise is, he manifests as the clown to scare children because he needs fear in order to continue to thrive.
Nickel smart.
And also, in Monsters, Inc., the monsters.
I'll kidnap 100 children before I let this company fail.
Yeah, but you know, it's like they're scaring the kids because they think that the screams generate the most power, you know, but they never are hurting the kids or like killing them or anything like that. Like, they keep them alive.
Now, Monster Pennywise could be of course, a lot like, darker.
Pennywise kills kids, but I think that he has to kill them to reinstate fear in the new generations because of how his like stuff functions. But.
Well, in the book, the reason he scares a kid, he doesn't feed off their fear. The fear makes them tastier. Yeah. So he still has to eat them. That the reason he fucks with the Losers Club so long is it's meal prep.
It's a 27-year meal prep.
All of It Chapter One is him seasoning children.
I mean, I have it on my bookshelf over there. I need to reread it because it's been a very long
God,
time.
That is such a big book.
It is. It is wild. Also, mine's a hardback copy because I had a paperback copy. I destroyed it reading it. Like, because it is so thick.
I thought you meant you burned it. That's how bad it scared you.
Like, it is so thick that, like, bending it breaks the spine to the extent that my book actually broke in half the first time I ever read it.
How do you make such a long book about clown scares children? Isn't there a turtle?
Yes. because Pennywise is actually like some alien creature who like lives on a turtle in space. I don't know.
I never read The Dark Tower, guys, like, and you can't make me.
I feel like now I'm crossing over Stephen King and Terry Pratchett, because now I'm thinking about Discworld, where it's like on four elephants that are all on a giant turtle.
I haven't read Discworld. Is it good?
It is incredible. Like, okay, one of the best books. Anything by Terry Pratchett or Neil Gaiman, I think, is a perfect novel.
I love Neil Gaiman. All right, Bigfoot. Where was I? Shit. But yeah, if you speak of those creatures, they know where you are and they're attracted to your location. And that's why generally indigenous people tend to be very hush-hush about it. Another reason I want to be more respectful towards this is they don't like non-indigenous people talking about it. Which leads me to why I think it might not be a pelt pedestrian. The locals have no issue talking about this thing.
Right.
Like, we've seen a bunch of reports made to the police and people sharing their experiences, including indigenous people who normally, if it was a SW, they would not talk about it. But here, they're talking pretty openly about it.
Yeah, that is kind of strange to me.
Yeah. So, maybe it's not. Our final and most reasonable explanation is the good old JP special. It's a bear. This is pretty self-explanatory. Arizona only has one species of bear, the black bear, with a population of about 3,000, according to AtoZAnimals.com. A population, I should note, that is frequently seen and encountered along the Mogollon Rim. And as we know, bears can stand and walk on their hind legs for an extended period of time. And I looked it up. An adult male black bear, when they stand on their hind legs, is about 7 feet tall.
Huh.
Yeah, right around the height being described.
Yeah, and I would argue that Bigfoot, I think, would be taller.
Yeah.
Like, I just imagine him taller as, like, 7 feet, because, I mean, my boyfriend is 6'4".
Well, maybe.
You know, and I'm like, I can't imagine, like, looking up at, like, a 7 foot thing and being like, oh, wow, that is so astronomically tall.
Most people it is. Now, you might object and say, well, what about the reports of a hairless creature? To which a skeptic may respond, that's a bear suffering from mange and losing most of its fur.
God, have you seen bears with mange? They're terrifying. Scary.
And that kind of makes sense. I mean, the first encounter could be a bear with mange, and that's why it looks so weird. And instead of, like, hollering, it's just roaring and making bear noises. Now, it doesn't explain why I had a club. I don't think bears can do that.
No.
But maybe. Maybe this really is just a bear with mange. Even the sightings of it linger around communities and campsites make sense, because bears could be attracted to said areas because they're looking for food. There's the old camping rule that you're supposed to put your food in a cooler and hang it from a tree to not attract bears. So it could be something like that.
Bears can climb trees.
Yeah, but you're supposed to, like, hang it out on one of the branches and keep it away from your campsite.
Okay.
So it's not to protect the food, it's to protect you. But yeah, they could be going to the campsites to eat, not people, but snacks.
Fair enough.
Yeah. There's not much more to these theories, though. Apologies if they seem a bit bare bones, because they're all pretty...
bare bones?
Oh my god, I didn't even realize. That's unbearable. They're pretty self-explanatory. They're your usual Bigfoot arguments, just applied to Arizona. If you think Bigfoot is a bear, well, you're gonna think this Bigfoot's a bear too. Now, with all that out of the way, we face the central question all cryptozoologists and shitty podcast hosts have to face. Is it real? What do you think, Jess?
I mean, the encounter, maybe the monster as, like, a being. I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, it's its own separate thing. Because I do think it's better explained as just something else.
You think it's just a Bigfoot?
It's either just a Bigfoot or, I mean, potentially a bear. The club thing is concerning. you know, in terms of the bear explanation, but also this is some guy in 1903. Like, did he actually see a bear with a club? Like, did he see anything with a club, you know?
Did he make it up?
Did he make it up? Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's another thing, too, that we have to think about in a lot of cryptid cases is, like, were these people just looking for a good story? Were these, like, outsiders of society who wanted some attention? Made up a good story.
A lot of old newspaper stories are lies. Like, yeah. We're going to probably do an episode on giants at some point, but one of the big pieces of evidence was that there's this newspaper article about a, like, 14-foot tall body being found at, like, a farm in Indiana back in, like, the early 1900s. And all these newspapers are writing about it, but there's never any follow-up. There's never photos or anything.
Right.
And that's because a reporter for, like, the Boston Globe went, and he was the only reporter to go to the farm.
And everyone else is just like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, they just, like, did word of mouth. And he's like, no, this is just a regular body. They just found a body in, like, the woods.
Yeah.
And which I is think, concerning in its own way, but...
Like I said, I think that that's just an issue with a lot of things. It's like, we don't really know if somebody was just, you know, an outsider and looking for attention, because they're obviously not an outsider anymore if we're still finding these stories all these years later. But we don't know the circumstances around the people who originally told the story. I don't know if it's real, honestly.
Undecided.
Undecided.
I'm gonna have to go undecided, leaning towards no.
Yeah.
Because if it's anything, I think it just had to be another Bigfoot. And but that's because I already believe in Bigfoot. So there's nothing in this episode. There's no evidence in this episode that's compelling enough to me. Like, if I ignored all the other Bigfoot evidence and just the stuff in here, it wouldn't be enough to convince me.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is, like, a lot of the theories for this one are all over the place. Like, oh, it's a Bigfoot. Oh, it's a bear. Oh, it's a skinwalker. Like, okay, so...
She saw the name. Fuck.
What the fuck is it? What is it? Like, there's no, like, solid evidence that it's anything.
Yeah. It only ever seems to be some other cryptid. That just wanders into Arizona. So, we're going with an undecided leaning towards no?
Undecided leaning towards no.
Yeah.
Well,
hey.
Can't all be winners.
Can't all be winners. And we had two yeses back to back. So, you know, one no, not even a no, an undecided isn't too bad.
No.
And that's that. Season 3 continues with another case closed and in the books. For updates, photos from investigations, and links to stuff mentioned in the episode, be sure to follow us on Twitter at The Cryptic Code. We also have a TikTok now. We got it just in time for the app to be banned. Which is fun. If TikTok does get banned, I'll have fun announcing that my podcast is technically officially banned by the government. If you have cases you'd like us to look into, email us at thecrypticcode@hotmail.com. Yes, we have a Hotmail. Yes, I'm an old man. And join us in 2 weeks for another case of cryptids will launch curiosity. Until then, remember, always have a lawyer present when making deals with dark forces. Every room is an escape room if you don't want to be there. And most of all, stay spooky out there. Good night.